Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, just a warning, our next item will discuss mental health illness and may be difficult for some people. Bipolar disorder is a mental health condition. It's characterised by intense mood swings, and those who suffer from the disorder can experience periods of elevated mood followed by deep episodes of depression. It can have a profound impact on those who live with bipolar, often making it challenging to maintain stable employment or to sustain relationships. And the reason we're talking about it is because it's World Bipolar Day on Sunday, the 30th of March. And today in studio to discuss all of this and the effect that it has on people's lives, I'm joined by Dr. Susan Brannick, who's Clinical Director at AWARE. And Sinead Keating is here too, someone who has lived with bipolar for most of her life. And you're both very welcome. Lovely to have you with us. Now, Susan, we might start with you. You might just tell us a little bit broadly about bipolar disorder and how it affects people.
Sure. Yeah, so as you said, bipolar is a serious mood condition. So by mood, I mean kind of emotions and emotional experience. And I suppose what makes bipolar a disorder is it's a condition of changes in mood. So you mentioned the highs, so we might call that an elated period, or a low experience of depression. So those experiences of mood changes are significant enough to impact on someone's daily life, mm-hmm. so to get in the way of their functioning. So there's different types of bipolar. So bipolar 1 is characterised by a major episode of elation, or a manic episode it used to be called, and bipolar 2 is characterised by what we might call hypomania, so periods of maybe feeling elated but maybe not as a longer a period as might be in bipolar 1, or maybe not as impactful on daily life.
Right.
So I guess there's different ways it can affect people. It can kind of, depression in terms of, that's going to be the same as someone who experiences depression outside of bipolar, so changes in mood, in kind of ways of thinking and ability to kind of do the things that might have been enjoyable. And a period of elation might be characterised again by changes in thinking, so maybe racing thoughts, difficulties sleeping, maybe connecting with ideas that might feel very strong or maybe different from kind of usual ways of thinking. So I suppose there's an idea maybe that someone might be high and then low. That's not really how it works, I guess, mm-hmm. in bipolar. Everyone's experience can be really different. In bipolar 2, as I mentioned, people might have a lot of experiences of maybe what we call hypomania, or maybe more experiences of a low mood. I think maybe the key thing to consider, I suppose, as you said, the impact on daily life, but maybe also kind of self-management. So understanding the condition, what it's like for you personally, is
yes,
really key.
And managing it best for yeah. yourself. And Sinead, this is where you come in. I mean, you've experienced what we've just heard there from a very young age. You were 11,
yeah,
is that right?
I was 11. I don't really remember what life was like before that, to mm-hmm. be honest. I had a perception that I was a very happy child. But at 11, I had a panic attack. And that was just the beginning of what was very difficult, I suppose, 10 years. And I was very distressed. So I have bipolar type 2. And the way it would manifest for me is what are called mixed episodes. So if I were to present to a doctor or just to a person, I may be seen as quite depressed. I'd be very low and I'd be crying and panicking a lot, feeling really intensely anxious. But my mind is going a million miles an hour, hopping here, there and everywhere. And I just wasn't sleeping. So really in my mid-teens, I'd be staying up for 2 or 3 days at a time, which I thought was great. I was having a great time. But, you know, listening to music or writing or whatever it was, and just having time for myself. And then, mm-hmm. of course, when I got into my 20s and realised that is absolutely not OK.
But at that time, from the age of 11 and through your teens, I mean, that must have been really difficult for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it was an awful time.
Yeah.
It was really terrible.
Because you didn't know what was going on, I assume,
no,
right?
And I, you know, this is the late 90s and into the early 2000s. Like, you know, I did know that there was bipolar in previous generations of my family. So there was that kind of openness, but it wasn't spoken about really in any way that related to me. It certainly wasn't picked up on that mm-hmm. I might have bipolar disorder, just that I was very angry, or maybe that I had very difficult teenage years. But then when I came into my 20s and, you know, things weren't settling down after the teenage years, and I just was so sad
yeah.
and so overwhelmed all the time. I found it really difficult to cope.
Mm-hmm. And were you getting help during that time?
during my teens, I was seeing the school counsellor. So I had some type of support. There wasn't any other support for me. I met my husband when I was 17 and then I always had him. So I was very lucky because I always had somebody then from the age of 17. The way I just ended up having a good pathway. I was in UCD. I had a bit of a breakdown just at exam time, went to the GP. She suggested I go to the psychologist. Went to the psychologist and she recommended I go to the psychiatrist. And I was with him until he retired a couple of years ago. So I suppose.
And that's when you got your diagnosis.
And I got
it?
My diagnosis. And I went in and I asked. I've been seeing him for about 6 months and we've been talking about how I feel and medication that might help and how I live my day-to-day life and, you know, being kind to myself, which was a problem. And after about 6 months, I went in and I said, I think I have bipolar disorder. And he said, yeah.
Okay.
And we hadn't spoken about it up to that.
And did you feel better knowing that that's what it was or worse? Or how did you deal with it?
No, it was, I suppose there were two elements to it. One, I had a huge sense of relief because it wasn't me. There wasn't something wrong with me. There's something over here that happens to other people. Mm. And it, like, I wasn't a bad person. It wasn't my fault. And on the flip side then, I knew that it was a serious diagnosis. I knew I'd have it forever. And I didn't know, I suppose, how shame and stigma would show up. But I knew that it was coming and it has come and it's been difficult for other people to deal with.
And it's not like some other conditions where you go, then I knew what I had, then I took the tablets, then I was fine.
Not at all. That's
not what happens here,
no.
Right?
Like medication, for me anyway, you know, it's good for some people and not for others. Medication is one pillar of support. You know, you have to have several others. So I've always had therapy. I have my husband and I have a really tight-knit group of friends. I'm able to work. I work in the mental health sector. So I live in a bit of a bubble, I suppose, where I'm supported from all sides and I can just be open. And I do this, things like this, going and speaking to the media. So I can just live in a way that's comfortable for me to be open about it. And I don't feel I have to hide, which is a really horrible... When you're trying to... when I was trying to deal with my illness in a way that made it comfortable for other people, that was a horrendous time. Well, so now I live in a way that's comfortable.
Well, I assume the stigma around it is a big part of it, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Even still, even now.
Yes. I think, I suppose the way I've experienced stigma is one, sometimes when I tell people that I have bipolar disorder, there's a bit of a disbelief. And I think that's because I don't really look like, you know, a stereotypical idea of what somebody with a mental illness looks like. But your mental illness doesn't look like anything. There's no such thing as a demographic who experience mental illness. And I think that feeds into what I would often experience in the wider public, which is that there's still a bit of an us and them and those type of people. And it just doesn't work like that. You know, mental illness can affect absolutely anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it could be you. Obviously, it is me. It could be anybody who's listening. And I still think that that disconnect is there.
So I'm going to bring you, just to pick up on something Sinead said about I was lucky to have this path in UCD through the doctor and the counsellor and the psychiatrist and so on. Is it hard to get a diagnosis? Can it be?
It can be. I guess Sinead's picked up on some really interesting things. Certainly for women, it might be more complicated to get a diagnosis. We know that in bipolar, it can take up to 10 years to get a diagnosis. Sometimes it's hard to tease apart what might be the condition. So one of the reasons for that might be certainly in the hypomania I described earlier, like that might not be the thing you go to the GP with. Certainly if you've had long periods of feeling quite low or just feeling quite neutral. So there might be difficulties in kind of identifying it yourself as well. And I guess it's also kind of building information and awareness about what it is. I think it can be complicated, yeah. But with that diagnosis, though, as Sinead says, you can then access kind of what is helpful to you.
Yes,
in
and
terms
what fits
of, yeah.
with you and how you're going to make this work for you. Mm. And is there a hereditary component to this or a genetic component?
There is a hereditary component to all mental health conditions generally. How that works, we don't know. We haven't isolated one single gene specifically. We know that there's a risk of if you have one parent who has bipolar, there might be a higher risk than the general population, but that's complicated. Mm-hmm. We don't know if that's biological or it might be the situation growing up in family. I think it's probably more important to think about recognising if things aren't going okay for you, how it is maybe to seek help. And as Sinead mentioned, kind of stigma can be a big block to doing that because it can be difficult to say, actually, I'm really struggling. And also, what would it mean if I had X diagnosis and what's that going to say? So that can be an obstacle to seeking help for some people. So it can be a complicated track along the way. So I suppose it's about building that awareness, but also building services around mental health conditions. You know, we're in 2025 now. There's still no mother and baby unit on the whole island. You know, so for women experiencing difficulties post-pregnancy, there's nowhere that they can be with their baby after birth. Mm-hmm. So that's we're now in 2025. That's quite a significant gap gap in the mental health landscape services.
Well, Sinead, I mean, it's good to come to you at that very point, because you went through pregnancy, and I assume you had to reduce medication, right, going through that, did
there you? There are several options, actually, for medication. I think I had five at the time. You can stay on your medication, you can switch medications, you can reduce, you can leave it exactly as it is, or you can come off medication for a certain period of time in the pregnancy and go back on. So, you know, for everybody, it's going to be different. And, you know, the experience of having bipolar disorder is different for everyone. You know, we all have our own personalities and our own DNA and, you know, whatever's gone on in previous generations of our family. So I was able to go in, I suppose, because I knew I had bipolar and I knew I wanted to get pregnant. Myself and my husband went in and had a consultation with a perinatal psychiatrist before I ever got pregnant. We discussed medication. I was doing a lot to look after myself. So then when I came to be pregnant and I was having twins, which was a bit of a spanner in the works, maybe, you know, I felt semi-prepared, but then things don't go the way you expect them to go. We went into lockdown 6 weeks before my girls were born. I had a breakdown when they were 10 weeks old. And as Susan said, there is no mother and baby unit. And I probably would have said it if Susan hadn't. I'm nearly filled with rage about it. I needed to go to hospital. I was feeling suicidal and I couldn't.
Because you would have been separated. You couldn't leave your babies.
I couldn't leave my babies. And, you know, because we were in lockdown, I wouldn't have had weekends to go home. I wouldn't have had any other visitors. I literally wouldn't have seen my children for however long I was at home. And I just was lucky that I was surrounded. My best friend came and stayed every weekend for 3 months and did overnight feeds. And my husband was back working full time and he took over every night feed.
Incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Amazing. But you know, to have twins for anybody is such a huge challenge. But to go through that on top and then to feel that you didn't have the support that you would expect to be there.
We are so far behind. Yeah. We're so far behind the UK in particular.
You know, I say this a lot on this programme, but there are conditions that we talk about here where you expect that the arms will be put around you and all the supports will be there. And when you find out that they're not there, it's really shocking for people who are on the outside looking in.
No. And I know that, it was obviously very challenging for all healthcare workers during COVID. And it was so early on.
Of course.
Nobody knew what to do. But the fact that we don't have access to inpatient support for people who are having babies, likely the most vulnerable stage of their lives, physically and mentally. And we just don't have that basic support. And women have to be separated from their children. It's horrendous.
Look, we could keep going, but look at my time. Thank you so much for being with us. World Bipolar Day is on Sunday, the 30th of March. And if people want more information, they can go to Aware, of course. Lots of resources there. Thank you both for coming in.
Lovely to talk to you.
And if you've been affected by anything that you've heard discussed here, please log on to rte.ie/helplines for more advice and information.